Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. Thanksgiving is tomorrow, and there will be more cars on the highway over the next 5 days than any other time of year. AAA estimates that almost 54 million people will travel at least 50 miles from home this weekend, and 48 million of them will be driving. In Pennsylvania, there's holiday travelers, Black Friday, Small Business Saturday, and deer season when thousands of hunters are heading to deer camp. Be especially careful tonight. The night before Thanksgiving is the biggest party night of the year, so there could be some drunk drivers on the road, so be careful about that. In fact, if you're going to drink, don't drive. With all that in mind, on today's Smart Talk, our guests are here to answer your questions about the rules of the road or traffic laws in Pennsylvania. Of course, we'll hear about other drivers as well. Joining us is Corporal Adam Reed, Public Information Officer for the Pennsylvania State Police. Corporal, soon to be Sergeant Reed, thank you for being with us today.
Hey, thanks, Scott. Thanks for having me.
Also joining us is Fritzy Schreffler, who is the Safety Press Officer with the Pennsylvania Department of Transportation, District 8 here in Central Pennsylvania. Fritzy, good to see you again.
Good to see you.
If you have any questions or comments, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. All right, so let me start with the big question, Corporal Reed, and that has to do with the amount of traffic out there and, in response, the amount of state police patrols, the number of state police patrols. I already heard from someone here at the station today that on a road where she very rarely sees a trooper, she saw five people pulled over this morning. You're smiling. You must be proud.
Well, hey, it's the time of year here. You know, today's the kickoff of the holiday travel season, and our troopers and local law enforcement are out there starting today here through the weekend, monitoring traffic and watching for aggressive drivers and watching for impaired drivers.
You know, I mentioned that it surprises some people when they hear that the night before Thanksgiving is the biggest party night of the year, because most people go to right away, they think New Year's Eve, but you have a lot of college students coming back, families getting together. I mean, it's great to celebrate, but at the same time, there are a lot of impaired drivers on the roads tonight.
Yeah, you're right. A lot of people don't view tonight as one of the bigger partying nights of the year, but it is. It never fails. We see fatal crashes. We have a lot of DUI arrests every year on this night. So for whatever reason, folks do get out and party.
Do you have any checkpoints going tonight?
We probably will. We probably will.
There are checkpoints for the locals that will going on in various counties.
Okay. Is there any difference between, we do know that Pennsylvania is the only state in the country where local police departments don't have radar to check for speeding. But is there any difference between state police and local police when it comes to DUIs?
No,
because it's not a matter of speed.
Right. Nope. No difference there at all.
Okay. So when someone has been pulled over at a DUI checkpoint, what happens?
Well, it's just like any other DUI. You know, when you pull up to the DUI checkpoint, we ask that you have your documents ready, you're courteous, and you slow down when you're approaching that checkpoint. And if the troopers or local officers have reason to believe that you are impaired, you're likely going to be pulled off to the side and given a series of field sobriety tests. And much like any other DUI stop, if they do find that you are impaired, you could go for a breath test or a blood test, and charges will be filed accordingly.
Mm-hmm. So it's up to the police officer. It's a matter of judgment of whether the officer thinks that the driver is impaired.
Based on their training.
I mean, they're all out there. I mean, it's not just hit or miss.
They're all out there with a specific amount of training, and they only stop people for a very short amount of time. It's less than a minute that you're inconvenienced, as many people view it. But any time that we can take somebody off the road who's had something to drink, we could be saving somebody's life.
What about... I know one of the bigger issues that you're dealing with now is not just those who have been drinking, mm-hmm. but those, I mean, we know we're in this opioid crisis, but people who are impaired from something other than from alcohol.
Right. Yeah. DUI drug arrests are really on the rise over the last few years. Like you said, the opioid crisis, unfortunately, is in full swing here. But we also see a lot of folks impaired on the combination of drugs and alcohol. Mm-hmm. And that drug isn't just illegal drugs, right. But we also see a lot of prescription drugs, painkillers. The important thing to remember, even if you are legally prescribed a drug, heed the warnings on that label. So you still could be very impaired on drugs that are legally prescribed to you. And just because it's legally prescribed doesn't mean you should get behind the wheel.
And part of that training that we have is drug recognition experts, and those are state and local police.
And that's happening more often.
And that's happening more often, where if they're not at a checkpoint, they can be called out. There is a list for them that somebody can call somebody out to come do. And what it starts off is a medical exam, basically, because we want to rule things out. Because I've been at checkpoints where people are in diabetic shock or having some other kind of medical issues. So then obviously we can get them help immediately. But then from there, I believe it's 7 different categories of drugs that they can then say, when you take them to the hospital, this is what you need to look for.
You've been at checkpoints? I mean, as a driver or as...
No, I've never driven through one because I'm not usually out that late.
Okay.
But I will often work ones in Cumberland County because that's where I live. And if I'm going to be out that late at night, I'd prefer to be closer to home. But I often count cars for them. It's something then that I can help do. So I sit there and I get to watch everybody coming by.
You get paid for that?
It's part of my job at PennDOT.
Okay. I wondered about that. I wonder if they like paid you per car or something.
No, I don't get paid by the checkpoint. It's just considered part of the job.
Right. And that money comes, a lot of that money comes from the feds, right?
It does. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of grant money.
All right. So let's get into some of the, because I already got some calls and some questions here. But one in particular, I understand that there's a pretty serious accident on Route 283 near Toll House Road in Dauphin County today. As someone who drives that road fairly often, there has been a major construction project there that just in the last few weeks, I think it was the westbound lanes that have been repaved, the eastbound, that's going to happen. But a lot of the construction equipment has been removed. It's now open 2 lanes in each way. But one thing I do notice is that the 55 mile per hour speed limit signs are still up, and it says work zone 55 miles per hour, even though it looks like the project is completed for now. So is that permanent, or is that, when I say permanent, meaning until the construction project is completely finished, or is that just something the signs will eventually come down or go back to 65?
Right. Well, the paving part of it is done for the season. We have to be done by the middle of October. We got an extension this year because of all the rain that we had. But no, we expect that the speeds will be restored for the winter, but we want people to be aware there still will be work going on over the winter. There are still things that the contractor can do over the winter.
So right now, even though those signs say 55,
it is 55 if the sign says 55.
Even though I'm the only one going 55.
Right? Yeah.
I go 58.
No, it's okay. I'm often the only one. Yeah, I feel like people are trying to crawl up
the
rear of my car.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
And, you know, we talked about this before, but it's important to note that the sign still says 55 because there are some changes with the lane structure, narrowing and lane shifting. So if folks are wondering, that's usually why.
And I guess probably what it is during construction, the lanes, you know, between the cattle chutes and, you know, how wide, they weren't wide, how thin they were with the lanes. And now they look like they're open up like, oh, this is normal again. It's a repaved road. Oh, this looks completely normal. Let's get back to 65.
It's always the danger anytime we finish any kind of construction project that results in a whole brand new pave. It becomes, you know, safer, smoother, but it's a speedway.
Yeah.
I mean, the reality is.
It's Daytona-like, yeah. All right, let's take a call from Ted in Harrisburg. Ted, you're on the air.
Good morning. I'm wondering what the point is of the law that says you have to have your lights on for safety during the daytime in certain zones. And let me follow up with the comment that at a distance at which it matters, say a quarter of a mile or more, if you can't tell that that's a truck or a car or whatever in your vision, then maybe you shouldn't be driving at all. And again, take it to an extreme. if I'm driving on 83 South and there's some erratic driving behavior or even a big accident somewhere down around Exit 1 or the Baltimore Beltway, should I care? Do I care? Other than empathy for those involved in the accident. It's so far away that it has no bearing on my driving experience. If it's 100 yards away, you sure better be able to tell that that's a car or some sort of vehicle.
Okay,
what's
Ted.
The point in the daytime of having the lights on for safety? You don't need your lights on to tell that that's a car or a truck.
Okay.
You should be able to even tell the make and model.
Hey, thanks for your call, Ted. All right, and I've seen that too, and I have to admit that there are times I've wondered, now, going through the tunnels and the turnpike, mm-hmm. I understand why you turn your lights on, but you know, often come across something that will say, turn lights off for safety. What's the idea behind that?
Well, a lot of people think because they've got daytime running lights, that should be good enough. But the purpose of turning the lights on is actually, one, mentally you're realizing you're in an active work zone. But two, it turns on the taillights. And although Ted said you should be able to tell, so what if we're in dusk or dawn or a lighter, maybe it's hazy out, foggy out. You can't see the taillights of the vehicle in front of you. So it's just an added measure for safety so that other people are definitely more aware.
And even though it may be a bright, sunny day like today, it's part of the law.
Yeah, it's part of the law. It's not something that we just decided, hey, let's do this.
Right.
It is an act of legislation, yes.
Okay. Corporal Reed, let me ask you, though, something else. And we've talked about this before. But there is law now for when Pennsylvanians must turn on their headlights during certain weather conditions. When is that?
Right. A good rule of thumb is to remember wipers on, headlights on. So anytime, by law, you're using your windshield wipers, you have to have your lights on. And like Fritzy said, that's not just daytime running lights, but that's actually you activating the vehicle's lights. So your headlights and your taillights are on.
You know, last Thursday during the snowstorm, I saw too many cars that did not have lights on. And I was thinking to myself, okay, it's one thing in the rain, okay, you should have them on, but in those conditions, as hard as it was snowing last week in the middle of the day, you know, I'd see a white car driving along the road and no lights on, and I'd flash them. I'd put it on, put the high beams on, you know, giving them some kind of flashing to say, turn your darn lights on, you know, because it was hard to see.
And I guess I don't understand why that would be an issue. Turning your lights on is such a simple thing. I do it every time I get in my car. It's not even just an active work zone thing for me. I do it every time I get in the car.
Well, I could, just as an explanation.
That's okay.
Is that they're probably, most cars today, most vehicles today, it will come on automatically.
Mm-hmm.
But,
yeah, mine
we're
don't.
But we're so used to, if you leave your car lights on, that our batteries would go dead. I think it's a habit thing.
Right.
But, you know, most cars today, they go off automatically. They come on automatically. Have you cited people? Do you know, do you have citations for people not turning their headlights on in bad weather?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I know, Art. I've seen it firsthand. I've stopped folks for not having their lights on. Like you said, a good example is the snow or driving rain. You know, you simply can't see the car, especially if it's a light color. You know, another one that our folks saw last week during that snow, I know it was the first snow of the year, but cleaning your windows off.
Mm-hmm.
So I personally saw a handful of cars driving with the little driver's slit made in the snow there.
Can someone be cited for that?
Absolutely.
Uh-huh. Yeah. What's the law?
Obstruction, right?
Yep, it's windshield obstruction. You have to clear off all of your windows of snow.
What about on your roof?
Roof, you do not. That's kind of a gray area. By law, you don't have to clear that roof off. But if that snow or ice becomes dislodged and causes a crash and causes injury, you could be looking at some pretty severe fines for that.
Mm. We have a couple questions here from listeners. Joe asks, in some states, there are laws that state an open bottle of wine can be transported if it's kept behind the rearmost seat in the car. Does Pennsylvania have a law like this? Does the law about no open containers apply to boxed wine as well?
Oh, goodness. That's a good question. I've never dealt with boxed wine. And you know, Pennsylvania does have an open container law, so I would suggest using common sense. If perhaps you're finishing dinner with a BYOB restaurant or transporting something like that, you know, tuck it away. Put it in a box or another bag. Don't have it sitting open
right
on your dash, right in your cup holder.
Yeah. What about transporting across state lines?
Technically, transporting alcohol across state lines is illegal, and you can be fined for it. So, yes, in a nutshell, it is illegal.
Even a small amount.
It's an older law, but it's for tax-related reasons.
I know. Pennsylvania wants to get theirs. Let's see. What else do we have here? And hey, don't take that as me criticizing the state. I'm just telling you.
Scott, I do have a correction to make to something we talked about earlier. I just heard from my boss, Greg Penny, who said that actually the speed limit on 283 will remain 55 until the project is completed in 2020. Because the contractor will be out there. So we want to keep it at that just to help keep the contractors' crews safe.
Okay. Well, you just made a lot of people unhappy.
I'm so sorry. I'm just the messenger.
I know. We have a question here. It says, I'm concerned about the dangers of pedestrian crosswalks for several reasons. Too many drivers don't recognize them, and I'm afraid that a pedestrian will get halfway across the street only to be struck by someone coming in the other direction not seeing them. The other concern is that I will be stopped for a pedestrian crossing at a crosswalk, and the person behind me will not recognize that I've stopped and run into me. I believe that we need a major public information campaign to be sure that everyone is aware of the pedestrian crosswalk laws. I'm curious as to whether there are any statistics as to injuries and accidents involving pedestrian crosswalks. It just seems as though there have been many more pedestrian accidents recently.
Yeah, you know, it comes and goes. It's not like there's a steady amount of them every year. And sometimes we take a look at them and just shake our heads, not knowing, you know, maybe an area where we have some data. And it's not mid-block, it's not necessarily crosswalks, it's not young, it's not old, it's not, you know, a signalized intersection. It's just, I always tell pedestrians, make sure you've made eye contact with that driver because there are so many distractions out there. You know, they could be messing with the radio, messing with their phones, things they're not supposed to be doing, looking at somebody else on the other side of the road, whatever it might be, and they don't see you. Yeah, the law is that they're supposed to stop if you're in the crosswalk. And that's another point. You have to physically be in the crosswalk, not waiting on the corner for a vehicle to stop. You actually have to put some feet down into it before law enforcement can do anything.
I would not go in the middle of the crosswalk.
No. Yeah. But before law enforcement can do anything, you actually have to physically be there.
But the point, and I don't know whether this is a man or a woman asking this question, but the point that the listener also made about cars behind you, I have seen that as well, that, you know, yes, you slow down. And two different scenarios that they describe. You slow down, the person behind you doesn't recognize that you know, there's no stoplight or anything, that they're not slowing down to stop for a crosswalk. And someone coming the other way just keeps right on flying through the crosswalk. So I guess that goes back to you have to pay attention to your surroundings.
Yeah, right. You know, unfortunately, that is possible. But I've seen a lot of crosswalks more recently having the lights, the warning lights being illuminated to warn folks that there is a crosswalk here.
Yeah, especially if there are areas where we know there's a large number of people crossing. You know, I can think of an area in Carlisle for Dickinson College that has lights that start flashing as soon as the pedestrian breaks a barrier there, like a laser.
How, you say there are more of them, Corporal Reed. I wonder if that's something that should be mandatory across the state. I know it costs more money, but a lot of those things are solar power, I think, aren't they?
That's true. It's probably going to come down to the funding that the municipality has available to them.
Yeah.
Like Fritzy said, Dickinson, there are a lot of crosswalks down there in Carlisle downtown. Yeah.
We put something near Cedar Cliff High School in response to a fatality that happened at an area where it's cresting over a hill.
Right.
Yeah, and it's really, you know, it's a really tough one. Like I said, I tell pedestrians to make sure that they've made eye contact with the motorist, to make sure that the motorist sees them, because even though the law says the motorist has to stop and people say, well, I'll sue them if they hit me. Okay, but you might be seriously injured or you might not be around to sue.
I even give the thank you wave sign when I walk across the
concrete. Exactly.
Yeah. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Back to Smart Talk. Day before Thanksgiving, biggest travel week of the year. Talking about that Pennsylvania traffic laws, what's right and wrong on the road. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can go to Twitter. We are on Twitter, @SmartTalkWITF. Our guest today, Corporal Adam Reed, Public Information Officer for the Pennsylvania State Police, and Fritzy Schreffler, who is the Safety Press Officer with the Pennsylvania Department of Transportation, District 8. 1-800-729-7532. Corporal Reed, before we go any further, we were just talking during the break, and you brought up a very important point having to do with crosswalks and cell phones.
Right. You're piggybacking off the crosswalk call there. It's important. I've seen it firsthand. I'm sure everyone else has too. For the pedestrians, when you're about to cross that crosswalk, get your head out of your phone.
Yep.
Be situationally aware, look up, like we talked about, and make eye contact with that oncoming vehicle driver to know that it's safe to cross. So please pay attention.
Let's take a call from John in York. John, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Yes. Hi, John.
Happy Thanksgiving, and thanks for working to keep us safe on the roads. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
I have a question concerning staying right, except for passing. It seems to me that there's more people traveling in both lanes, and as I understand it, that's still not allowed in PA. Is that correct?
You are correct. By law, you are to keep right and only be in the left lane unless you are passing or coming up on some kind of an exit on the left side of the road or a turn.
Now, is that something that's enforced, or is that? It seems to me that would be difficult to enforce.
It can be difficult, but I could tell you firsthand that it is something we certainly enforce. I've enforced it myself, so our folks are out there looking for it.
I will say this, John, just in on the times that we've had Corporal Reed on the program and talking about this, this is probably one of the biggest complaints that we hear is of people driving in the passing lane and not getting over when they're going slower.
Right, it is. I've seen firsthand. I've stopped people and cited folks from out of state for hogging that left lane up, and they say, "Well, I'm from out of state. I didn't know." But you know what? It's really a matter of common sense,
yeah,
in my opinion,
and courtesy, because
and courtesy,
it backs
right
up traffic. Mm-hmm. John, anything else?
No, that's it. Again, thank you very much, and have a safe holiday.
All right, you too. Thank you very much. Let's go to Guy in Harrisburg. Guy, you're on the air. Let me see here. Where are you, Guy? Guy, you're on the air.
Thank you. It's Guy from Harrisburg, and happy Thanksgiving to everybody.
Happy
My question today is, what is the law surrounding the solid white line that you get when you're coming onto the interstate down a ramp? Usually you get that solid white line and you get the dotted white line. I was always taught that you were to wait until the dotted white line before actually moving over into the lane, assuming, of course, that it was safe. But I see people all the time, particularly from 22 coming south to get onto 81 south, they just dive across that solid white line all the time. So I was just wondering, what is the law around
okay
that?
Well, Guy, before you go any further, let me just ask you to describe that a little more. You mean they're entering the interstate and then jump out into the passing lane right away?
Yeah, and they cross a solid white line.
Right, okay. All right, thank you very much for your call.
So, I mean, obviously anything legal goes to Adam, but yeah, the solid white line there, people are in a hurry. Everybody is in such a hurry. So they think if they can, they see a spot, I'm going to get out here. I'm not going to wait for the people in front of me. So technically, yes, you are supposed to wait until the line becomes a dotted line to then merge over into the other lanes.
Ever cited anybody for that?
I have actually. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Like Fritzy said, that could be dangerous. It's designed for you to wait your turn there. When you hop out in front of folks waiting to merge ahead of you, that could potentially cause a crash
mm-hmm.
and
okay
be dangerous.
Maybe you've answered a question I've always had, and I just thought of this. I've seen a trooper on a ramp, like sitting next to the ramp, and I've always wondered, what are they seeing here on a ramp? And, and I'm thinking, for example, 283, where it's I-283, and it goes around to State 283. Mm-hmm. I'll often see a trooper there, right there by the turnpike toll booths, and I'm thinking, what can that trooper see? What are they looking for at that point?
Sure. So there's a few things that maybe they could be looking for. They could be looking at license plates. just make sure registrations are in order there. They could be watching people merge to make sure they're doing so legally. Or it could also be a good vantage point to run some radar.
Yeah.
And to monitor speeds.
Monitor speed.
Okay. Well, see, I didn't think for radar because everyone's slowing down anyway.
We hope.
We hope, yeah. Because of the turnpike toll booths and that ramp goes in a circle. So.
Right. And that's a little bit different area, though. A lot of times when you see them sitting on ramps, that's what they're doing is they're watching for, improper lane changes, illegal merging, speed. Because they can still, they don't have to be facing you to run speed. They can still run speed behind you. Mm.
We mentioned headlights. We had a couple people who called in about this, Nancy and Joseph, both talking about the newer headlights that are much brighter. Mm-hmm. People are driving with their high beams on and it's blinding. Joseph says those new lights on trucks and cars are almost blinding. Is there anything being done about that? Even my eye doctor says they're bad for your eyes.
Yeah, I've noticed that too. A lot of mm-hmm. that is factory on those vehicles, and in that case, it's likely going to be legal.
Yeah, but nothing legislative-wise that Pennsylvania can do about that.
Right, right.
I mean, again, that's a common courtesy.
Yeah.
But let me ask this. Is there any kind of law or someone who has their high beams on coming toward you? Is there any kind of law that someone can be cited if they do that?
Yes, absolutely. There, it says in black and white there in the law, X number of feet mm-hmm. approaching a vehicle, you have to turn your high beams off.
Okay.
And I could find and that now here with next
these,
break.
Yeah, and now with these new lights, I do struggle sometimes at night to decide, are they a high beam?
Sure.
Is it a regular light?
Well, the
light?
Blue ones.
Yeah.
You know, the ones that are, you know, really, really
I mean,
tough.
There are some that people have altered themselves,
yeah.
and that's
yeah.
also illegal, but...
Yeah. You know, I keep asking you, Corporal, sound like I'm giving you a test, but have you ever cited anybody for not turning their high beams down?
I can't recall offhand.
All right, there's a challenge for you.
Maybe, I think I have stopped people for it. Oftentimes when we're running radar or running speed, people will flash their headlights to warn other motorists.
Right.
Hey, there's a trooper sitting up
Is
there.
Is that illegal?
So, you know, technically, by the letter of the law, yeah. you can't have your high beams on within X number of feet of oncoming traffic.
No, but I mean warning other drivers.
No. I don't think it's part of the vehicle code anywhere.
Okay. Bridget asks, I'm wondering if your guest could discuss proper procedure when merging from two lanes to one. It seems folks in central Pennsylvania are trying to be polite by stacking in a single lane much earlier than necessary and much earlier than the road designers intended. This result can be the stack blocking intersections, unnecessary backups on highways, etc. What's the proper procedure for utilizing two lanes before they merge into one? I assume she's talking about construction zones are a good example.
Construction zones are a good example, and I believe she's speaking about the zipper merge,
yes.
which is very common in other states. It's also very common in other areas of the state. In Pennsylvania, we leave it up to each engineering district to determine whether or not they want to use that stay in your lane until the merge point, because what we find is with the high volume of traffic we have in my district alone here in South Central Pennsylvania, we have a lot of road rage and a lot of aggressive drivers. So people think, oh, they're just trying to get past me. So that's when you see vehicles that will move over into the lane that's going to be shutting down and blocking any traffic from continuing. In theory, it's a great idea for everybody to go up to the merge point and then everybody to be polite and let somebody merge in. But the reality is we were actually asked years ago by the state police to not do zipper merge, not really promote it here in this area because they were seeing many more incidents at the merge point, whether it was a road rage incident or a crash or something like that.
I've seen stories that have said mm-hmm. that it's actually safer
right.
to do that, but... because of the road rage situation, maybe not.
I mean, you think about any road that you're on and it's, you know, you see that symbol that shows that it's going to merge into one and it doesn't have to be construction. You tell me you aren't looking at the person who's coming up on your side going, what, you can't get in line?
Right.
So
right.
it is a mentality shift.
And there's
shift.
A few words in between.
Yes, yes, there's a mentality shift.
Yeah. Jim asks, I understand there's a relatively new state law that requires motorists to provide at least 4 feet of clearance when passing a bicyclist. Mm-hmm. Are drivers permitted to cross the double yellow line when safe to do so when passing a cyclist?
Yes, he's correct. That law is 4 feet. You must provide 4 feet when passing a bicyclist, and yes, you can cross the double yellow as to provide
as
that 4 feet.
Nothing coming towards you.
Right.
There are times
right,
when
right.
you can't provide that 4 feet, but provide as much as you possibly can or slow down.
Right.
And actually, something similar, passing Amish buggies. Is that very similar?
Same thing would go for, mm-hmm. you know, a farm vehicle, Amish buggy. As long as there is not a no passing sign there, and when it's safe to do so, barring you coming up to the crest of a hill blind curve, yes, you
okay,
can
when
pass.
You say no passing, okay, so the bicyclist, and he's talking about double lane, that's a no passing zone. You can go around a bicyclist if you give 4 feet, you look ahead and all that. But I just want to be clear on this. A farm vehicle, an Amish buggy, if there's a no passing zone, you can't go around that legally go around that vehicle?
No, and whenever you see a no passing sign involving a double yellow, it's usually there for a reason, because it might be a blind curve or a blind hill. But as soon as you're out of that no passing zone, you could legally pass.
Okay. Bertina asked on Facebook, I've always heard that it is legal to go 5 above the speed limit. Is this true?
So, yes and no. So, by law, our troopers, when using radar, do have to give a 5-mile-an-hour buffer whenever we're running radar. However, other means of speed verification don't apply to that 5 miles an hour.
Okay, I'm going to ask you again. Have you pulled people over going less than 5 miles or more than 5 miles, within 5 miles of the speed limit? Because probably someone would say,
ever doing that,
someone would say, "Oh, you're being, you know, kind of a letter to the law kind of guy if you do that."
Right. I can't recall ever doing that. Not to say it's never happened
well,
out there, but
I think the interesting thing is when the state police or local police report speeding statistics, like maybe they did a certain operation over however many days, and this is how many speeders we caught in this amount of time. Typically, those people are going more than 20 miles an hour over the speed limit.
Right.
Yeah. You know, unfortunately, it's not that hard to go out on 81, 83,
right.
283 and find somebody that's zipping along at, you know, 20 miles an hour over pretty quickly.
Yeah. Let's go to this guy calls himself Trucker Dave, and he's on 83. Trucker, how are you?
We're just doing fine.
Okay, well, that's good. Where are you
enjoying
from?
The show, learning quite a bit.
Where are you from?
I live in northern New York, where
oh,
once you get past Syracuse, traffic thins out rapidly.
So, are you driving while you're on the phone?
I'm hands-free.
Okay, well, that's good. I wanted to make sure. Okay, so what were you going to tell us?
Well, the thing that prompted my call was I had somebody that demonstrated exactly how they cross over a solid white line on an on-ramp and go straight over to the far left lane. And it was just a picture-perfect example of what we were just talking about 5 minutes ago.
And you're driving a tractor-trailer, right?
That's right. And we would like to have a little extra courtesy sent our way by the drivers of the smaller cars, which we refer to as four-wheelers, that we can't stop on a dime, and when we have a cushion of distance between us and the vehicle we're following, that's a safety cushion. It's not where three cars should insert themselves, but we know that that's what they do, and so we back off again and let them in and try to be extra friendly. And so there's a lot of things that your listeners should know about driving around 18-wheelers that might keep them safer.
Hey, I'm curious, and aside from road conditions, which that's another show, Fritzy, any difference you see in Pennsylvania drivers than drivers in other states?
Well, there are aggressive drivers everywhere, mm-hmm. as your guest will attest to. Depending on the location and what time of day it is, people can be pretty stressed out when it's the rush hour, a.m. or p.m.
Where are you heading to?
Oh, I'm going down to a wonderful location down near Virginia Beach.
Oh, jealous!
Are you going to be make it home for Thanksgiving?
It'll be a turkey day on the road for me. I was home last year, so I'm letting somebody else stay home this year.
Okay, well, enjoy your trip, and I'm glad you called in.
Okay, and if you could address the proper way to merge, that might educate a lot of drivers, too, because there's people that get out on the merge lane and they don't know exactly what they're doing as far as trying to insert themselves in fast-moving traffic.
All right. Thank you very much for your call. He brings up a great point, and I notice he used the word insert, and that brings up a vision in your mind of what it looks like. But what is the proper way to merge?
Sure. So, like we talked about before, wait your turn. And another common mistake that I often see when folks are merging is you're going full speed, and you get to the bottom of that ramp and realize, uh-oh, there's nowhere to go here. And you hit the brakes, and you stop at the very, very end of that merge ramp.
Yeah, where there's no room to then merge.
Right. So then you can't build up speed to then put yourself safely back into the fast-moving traffic. Mm-hmm. So do your best to judge it as you get to that ramp, and use your side-view mirror and build up speed and successfully merge in.
And we do get some road rage with that in terms of people... And it's a reaction to what's going on. The people who are on the main road, there is no law that says they have to move over and get out of your way. It's a courtesy thing. But yeah, you need to, at the top of that ramp, you need to start judging what the speeds are and where the open lanes are, you know, spaces are, so that you have time to react as you get closer to the merge point.
Mm-hmm. I have had many people, when you talk about road rage, that I'll be in the right lane, can't get over because there's a car passing me. Yeah. And, you know, the guy who's merging, like
giving you,
know,
you a look.
That's, well, more than a look.
Yeah.
If I could read lips and then end fingers. and I'm like, hey, buddy, what do you want me to do?
Right. Yep.
Do you want to knock this guy off the road so you can merge?
Yeah.
Yep. No, it's 100% incumbent upon that yielding driver to yield to that traffic.
That's why there's a yield sign.
You are listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. Day before Thanksgiving, we're talking about Pennsylvania traffic laws and questions about the road. Our guest today, Corporal Adam Reed, Public Information Officer for the Pennsylvania State Police, and Fritzy Schreffler, who is the Safety Press Officer with the Pennsylvania Department of Transportation, District 8, that's here in central Pennsylvania. If you have a question or a comment, be patient. We have a lot of calls, a lot of emails. 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at Smart Talk WITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. I have another question about the high beams. This one actually has to do with the signs and how they reflect. But, Corporal, I know you had something else you wanted to pass along, but let me read this one. Tim from Elizabethtown says, reflecting on signs, the reflectivity is so bright when you hit your lights and they hit the sign, you can't see the sign. What's your opinion on that?
Yeah, you know, and for years what it was that you couldn't see the sign
That's right.
It wasn't reflective enough. So it's something that we're constantly working on, is trying to determine what is the right amount of reflectivity. But when you start looking at the technology and, like we talked about, these bluish headlights and things, you know, it changes so much. And it's really expensive for us to change signs. To change that reflectivity. Well, for example, we had one in Lancaster, and it had some on 283, and it had some graffiti on it for years. Well, it's $2,000 to replace the sign, but it's $2,000 for the contractor to go out there and actually put the sign out again. So, you know, you're looking at $4,000 with labor and materials and
I mentioned earlier about a sign that you know, I see a lot of signs that are solar paneled. Is that becoming more prevalent too? I mean, is it signs that have lights?
Yeah, I don't know so much for us that it is. That's probably not really a technology I've kept up on.
Okay.
Honestly, I'm being honest.
I know. There's something you have to look for.
Yeah.
Maybe Greg.
Maybe Greg, who hopefully is still listening to me.
Oh, he better be still listening. You know?
Yeah.
All right. So, Corporal, what were you going to say about the lights?
So, yeah, Scott, we talked about the high beam question earlier there, and I said there was an X number of feet that you cannot use your high beams, and I found that for all the listeners.
I don't know
there.
How you did in that size.
I know, right, isn't it?
That thing's huge.
Yep, right. So, according to the law, when you are approaching an oncoming vehicle, within 500 feet, you have to use your low beams. So
500 feet.
Mm-hmm. feet with an approaching vehicle, you have to turn off your high beams.
Now, does that count? Does the book say, the book, by the way, the book is the Pennsylvania, what's it called?
The vehicle code.
So this is our Pennsylvania Criminal Justice Handbook.
How many pages in that
any
book?
Law that you could ever imagine here in Pennsylvania. Oh, gosh, we're looking at...
That's probably about three, 4 inches thick.
About 2,300 pages in this thing.
Yeah, I'm surprised you found that. But okay, I have a scenario, though, for you. Divided highway. I often wrestle with, okay, do I hit the high beams, I'm out in the country somewhere? I'm on the other side of the interstate. I'm thinking, because I'm always thinking about deer. Mm-hmm. Do I have to go to my low beams here or what?
Now, the law is kind of silent on divided highways here. It simply says oncoming vehicle. So I would venture a guess that if you believe that person would be endangered by your high beams there, then turn them off.
And you do see it on the divided highways. I mean, you know, when we were traveling, say, 78, when we were going back and forth to Kutztown for a couple of years, if I can see your headlights, you can see mine.
Right, right. You know, maybe if there's a cement median there, some kind of a wall splitting the traffic, then it might be okay. But that's a good, great rule of
thumb. But again, there's hills, there's curves. Right. If you can see anybody's headlight on the other side of the cement barrier, they can see yours. So,
by the way, deer whistles, they work. Oy.
I've never seen any information saying definitively whether or not they work. I've heard mixed things on that.
We have a lot of vehicle deer crashes in this state.
Yes.
43,000, yes. I think, most years. So be careful when you're out there, especially this time of year.
October, November, early December.
There's rut. Yep. Deer season starts next week. Let's go to Mike in Hershey. Mike, you're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, welcome.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment that back in the day, there were, state troopers would give the driving test to all pedestrians. And, you know, that was enough to put you under some duress, which I think is good. Also, you had a thorough book that you had to go through. I'm not 100% understanding what the procedure is nowadays, but I don't think it's thorough enough. I don't think enough drivers understand the rules. And along with that, there's no common sense anymore on the road. There's not much in the way of courtesy, and there's not much attention paid to what speed limits actually are. Most people are driving these days 15, 20, and plus miles over the speed limit and don't really seem to even care.
Hey, Mike, thank you very much for your call. He addressed several different things there, but let's talk about actually getting your driver's license. I think he said pedestrian. I think he meant driver. Mm-hmm. Drivers. It has changed a lot. I mean, I remember when I first went for my test, it was like, okay, make sure you know how to do your three-point turns. Mm-hmm. Make sure you know your rules about when you could pass a school bus. But what about it? How's it changed over the years?
Well, it's not administered by the state police anymore. I remember when I, went for my driver's license, I had to wait till I was 18, and it was a state trooper that did it. And I failed on the three-point turn because I didn't use my turn signal. And I said, but we're not on a road. We were on a course. But at any rate, no, we have trained inspectors, evaluators now. It is a process to go through. One of the really good things that we've done is the graduated driver's license. So now you have to have 65 hours of driving time behind the wheel, and it's really incumbent upon parents to not lie about something like this.
It is
too important. There's 10 hours that's supposed to be at nighttime. There's 5 hours that are supposed to be in inclement weather, whether that's snow or rain or whatever it might be. And, you know, you get a lot of parents who say, well, I don't want to take them out in a snowstorm or a thunderstorm, and I really don't want them driving at night. So do you really want the first time that they have to deal with something like that to be without you? Mm. You know, maybe with friends in the car or alone and scared. Those 65 hours are super important for you to go through. And one of the things that we do provide when you go to get your permit is we give the parents a supervised guide to driving that breaks down almost everything that you could think of and maybe hopefully breaks some of the bad habits that those of us as parents who've been driving forever might not be doing, or we might be doing the wrong way. Another issue you have is that we have people say, Grandma never drove. And her husband dies. So now she's in her 60s or 70s or 80s, and she suddenly wants to go drive. there's no 65 hours of driving. She can go get her permit, and a couple weeks later, she can go take her driver's test.
I hear it all the time, but there are a lot of questions to go along with it. There are people who believe that you reach a certain age that you should have to have your at least be tested again. But Pennsylvania, what's the law for? I mean, we don't have a cutoff or a deadline or anything like that.
There's random testing that's done. So anybody over the age of 45, so we can exclude Adam in the room right now.
Yeah.
Anybody over the age of 45.
Are you assuming I'm over 45?
I'm guessing maybe I'm older than you. I don't know.
Right,
I was trying to be nice there. Okay, so we're over 45. You and I could get a letter in the mail that says we need to, you know, take a retest.
Right.
And it's a random thing. It's not targeted at anybody. I often tell people that, you know, my grandmother drove until she was, I think, about 95.
Wow.
And she hit a tree, and that was a bad thing. And she gave up her license. But people are too afraid to have that discussion with their mature driver, whether it's a parent or another relative or a neighbor. They're too afraid to have that discussion because it's taking away some independence. And then what do you do? So that's often an issue. But there are people who are driving in their 80s who probably drive better than some people who are in their 20s. So
yeah. And, you know, from the law enforcement point of view, if we come across a driver, whether it's a traffic stop, a crash, and for some reason, whether it's medical, psychological, we can submit paperwork to PennDOT, who in turn would then force that person to go get a special driver's exam, they call it, by their doctor, and have the medical community weigh in on whether or not they should have that license.
Let's take a call from Robert in Lancaster. Robert, you're on the air. Hello, Robert?
Yes, my question has to do with what constitutes running a red light. I see a lot of people rushing to beat the light. Must they complete the cross the intersection before it turns red, or is it okay to still be in there when it's yellow?
All right, thank you for your call.
So by law, if you are in an intersection and the light quickly turns from yellow to red and you are not behind that line but rather in the middle of that intersection when the light turns, legally you could still proceed through that intersection.
Okay. Speeding up, though, when the light is yellow.
No. Yellow is caution. It's slow down.
Yes, absolutely. We don't advise speeding up to try to beat that light.
Because you have no guarantee that there is an extended period of time between that light turning red and the next one turning green.
We got a lot of headlight calls. Okay. Darius asks, if you're at a red light that has a right turn signal, does that mean that you cannot turn right unless the turn signal or the light is green? Is this another way of saying no turn on red?
Mm-hmm. No, it's not. If it's safe to do so, you could still make that right turn. But that green arrow turns green whenever it's 100% safe
to
do so.
Yeah, then it's protected.
One thing that I will mention, because this is a question that arises often, is when you can legally make a left turn on red.
Mm. Yep, that's an interesting one. A lot of people don't know. But you can make a legal left turn on red when you are coming from a one-way street onto another one-way street. So an example of that might be in downtown Harrisburg.
Yep. Front and Pine, I think, is one of the ones I can think of. And there has to be no sign preventing you from doing that.
David asks, do we still have jaywalking statutes?
Sure, yes.
What's jaywalking?
So,
as opposed to the crosswalk.
Sure. So jaywalking, in a nutshell, is whenever you are crossing the street at any location other than a properly marked crosswalk.
Okay. So there's no traffic coming, though.
Sure. You know, simply put, it could be dangerous. Absolutely. When, you know, drivers may not, in a busy urban area, busy city environment there, folks simply aren't expecting folks to
walk
jet
out between cars.
Right behind a car right in front of them. So safest thing to do is go to that crosswalk.
We only have about a minute left. I want to thank all of you, the two of you, for being with us. And we have a lot of phone calls and emails here. Okay if I pass these things along?
Absolutely.
Okay, and we'll try to answer them on our website. But, Corporal Reed, I'll just leave it with you. There will be a lot of traffic out there. Advice that you have for motorists.
Yep, if you're hitting the road here today or through the holiday weekend here, have patience, first and foremost. Buckle up. Don't drive impaired. and get to your destination safely.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of times people hear that and they're so used to hearing it that it doesn't register, but they really should take it seriously.
Absolutely. And a lot of folks might hit the road with that mindset, oh, that's not going to happen to me. I'm never going to be in that situation until it does.
But I look at this year and my sweet friend Missy Schweitzer, who is unfortunately recognizing the 10th year of the death of her only son as a result of an impaired driver.
I want to thank both of you for being with us today. Fritzi Schreffler from PennDOT District 8, Corporal Adam Reed, soon to be Sergeant Adam Reed, Public Information Officer, Pennsylvania State Police. Thank you very much for being with us, and happy Thanksgiving to both of you.
Thank you very much. Same to you.
Coming up on Monday's program, school superintendents, PA Post did a story and really learn a lot about superintendents in PA.